Jane Fisher is here, as she is every Monday at this time. She's the Jean Hales Professor of Women's Mental Health at Monash University. Good to be talking to you again.
And very nice to be back. Thank you.
We've both had a little bit of time off, and you've been off working around the world, because that's one of the joys of the job. Now, tell me, I've watched my own parents go through this, and I suppose that as we all live longer, we all expect... What's a good kicking off point for looking after our parents?
Well, I think you're right to start with one of the consequences of a longer life expectancy. And Australia is one of the countries in the world where, on average, we have a very long life expectancy. Mm. But one of the aspects of that is that there can be increased years lived with disability, or at least with increased dependence. And usually the first responsibility for caring, at least for our aged parents, falls on adult children. Mm. And a time comes for many families where the needs of the frail or ageing person exceed what the family can provide. And often this is a very difficult decision where you're thinking about, do we need some respite care? Do we need more care in the home? Or do we need to actually think about discussing with our family member whether they need to move into more supported accommodation, ultimately even nursing home care?
Sounds like a difficult conversation.
I think a very difficult conversation, and probably one, like many, that it's good to have early, but very difficult to raise.
And maybe also too the desires. You might have that conversation early, but then people can change their mind. Look, 1300 222 774. I know that many, many people go through this. What have you gone through with your parents? They might have moved in, and that's worked really well. You might have got a live-in for them in their own home. Many people want to stay in their own home. Or you might have had to make a very difficult decision and go through that arduous path of deciding either with your parent or perhaps without really them being aware that they needed to go and live somewhere where they could be looked after full time. 1300 222 774. I'd love to know how you handled it, whether or not it was difficult. Maybe a lot of people are going through this and it isn't too hard. Maybe there are ways of preparing ourselves that really make a difference. 1300 222 774. Jane, do you think there's any... common guidelines or common principles people can keep in mind when they're dealing with this?
Well, I think obviously the preferable way of doing it is that the person themselves, the affected person, has some agency about this, so some choice. Yeah. But as you've said so well, often this decision is perhaps delayed or avoided to the point where either there's a crisis, they get sick and they clearly can't go back to living independently, or there's a deterioration that is very apparent to others but perhaps not so apparent to the person themselves, that they lose perhaps awareness that they're doing things that are dangerous or risky. Often there are some steps towards it, and some of us are very aware our parents no longer drive very safely, and we have to have the discussion with them about driver's licenses and maybe it's time to start using taxis. But I think you're right in saying most people would prefer to remain living in their own home until the end of their lives and would prefer not to go into other forms of accommodation. But I think one of the paradoxical things is that sometimes people can actually make that move and then find they actually feel significantly better.
Do you think that happens a lot?
I don't know whether it happens a lot, but I think it happens to a significant degree that there are fewer worries then about having to maintain a household or manage the accounts or make sure that the house is secure, and that sometimes there can be an improvement in health and well-being. But there are definitely some people who really find the experience of living in either group accommodation or some form of supported accommodation really dispiriting, and that they really give up an enthusiasm for life pretty soon after they make that move. And for caregivers, I think it can be something that they feel deep ambivalence about, that they would like to perhaps care for their family, but the needs just exceed what can be provided. This is certainly so if the person is affected by dementia, and so they begin perhaps wandering at night, not being able to feed themselves, not being able to take care of themselves, and that really exceeds what one child or family member can provide. Sure. It needs care around the clock.
So many of us don't really, in our own homes, have the space to look after another adult. I'm sure that's an issue for many people. Andrew's called from Baldwin. Hi, Andrew.
Hi there, Raf, and so I've just hopped in the car, so I didn't get the name of your guest.
Jane Fisher from Monash University.
Yeah, and
hello, Andrew.
You're talking about, I can relate to, my mum's in full-time aged care. My dad was her carer at home, but he's 3 years older. He was, just was getting, and she, sorry, was had dementia, which was advancing, if you like. It came to the time where we had to make a decision, my brother and I, that mum needed to go into care because it was just impacting on dad's health. And I still remember taking dad down the park to have a talk to him and just explain what we needed to do and why and sort of...
Did he respond to that, Andrew? You obviously did it with a lot of sensitivity.
Yeah, he responded to it and he understood, but he also, in the back of his mind, and by the way, he was 89 at that stage, he still felt that he was letting mum down, you know?
Yes.
And we were able to explain as best we could. And at the end of the day, he knew that from his own health point of view that he needed to that the decision needed to be made. But now, and in fact, I'm just heading to the care coordinator, social worker, where my dad is living still independently now for a meeting because now it's getting close to my father perhaps needing to go into aged care.
Andrew, can I ask you,
yep,
how's it changed you having to become a big part of caring for your parents, the people who raised you? How's that affected you?
Look, you know, yeah, it can create some, I don't know whether stresses is the right word, but certainly it's, because I have one brother, but he lives in Perth, so, you know, that's the way it is. So I have to take on all issues and everything to do with my parents' welfare, which you're happy to do because they're your parents. But, no, it's certainly, I've had moments where I'm on the phone to my brother saying, mate, I just can't, you know, you're going to have to sort of give me a bit of a hand here or whatever. But, you know, you soon sort of settle down and do the best that you can. But, no, it does, it's a big thing in... as you get older, in seeing the changes with your parents, because the other thing is, where my mother is, it's a great facility, and she's got advanced dementia now.
Mm.
I can just see that once my dad goes into aged care, that'll, you know, it's just going to be a constant downhill from there. So
are they able to be in the same facility, or your dad's needs not quite as marked as your mother's needs?
They will be in the same facility. Although Dad's needs aren't quite as severe, but I just think that I agree with what people have been saying, that it's great if you can keep your parents living at home independently as long as possible, and that's what we're trying to do, and that's one of the things to be discussed at this meeting I'm going to today.
Okay.
I really relate, Jane, to your conversation and what you're talking about today.
Well, thanks, you very Andrew. Much for talking to us about your experience.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Good luck with your parents. Jan's called from Ocean Grove. Hi, Jan.
Hi, Rafe. Hi, Jane.
Hello, Jan.
We have a different story. There are three daughters in the family and wonderful parents and a very close-knit family. And my mother, living in a retirement village in Templestowe, I live in Ocean Grove, and my two sisters live closer to the village itself. And mum was dying of cancer, and she would not go into hospital or a nursing home or refuse to leave the family unit, really.
Mm.
So we got the hospital bed in there, and with the help of some palliative care nurses, round the clock, 24 hours a day, we had a roster for 4 months to nurse mum and therefore look after our dad with emphysema, but no dementia. They were in their 90s, wonderful company. And we spent 4 months doing that until mum passed away. And then, of course, dad was used to having the three daughters there on and off. And so for another year, until March this year, when dad waited a year and a day until he had his stroke that made him pass away, we intensely looked after him because he wouldn't move either.
Mm.
And we didn't want to break his heart. And, you know, we looked after mum so intensely, we felt like we had to do it for him. So I left my job. One sister had an operation and put her out of action for 10 weeks. So really two daughters just did it round the clock.
Sounds like a massive commitment.
Yeah.
It was a massive commitment. And if I'd say the stress in all of it was that... there was different expectations from one of the daughters about how long we could keep this up without risk.
Mm.
I think that's one of the things that can definitely happen is that the children themselves have to negotiate this, and almost invariably there's different capabilities and capacities between them. And what you've done is absolutely extraordinary to provide full-time sort of hospital care at home for your parents. And I imagine that this allowed your parents to have just the end of life that they desired, but it sounds like it's taken a significant toll on all of you.
We're there when you were needed. It's like having young babies and you get no sleep and you just function. We had to function. At the end of Mum's day, she was waking every hour. And, you know, you had to be there because Dad couldn't lift her or do anything with his emphysema.
Mm-hmm.
But she'd given so much to us. And, you know, like I was 58 at the time and everyone else was older. So I still had a young son living at home that was causing me a bit of grief. And 4 hours of driving tired me out 3 times a week.
Sure.
But we look back on it and we didn't know it would only last, you know, 16 months. It could have lasted 3 years. But it was wonderful to give back the care at the end, and we were happy to do it. It just takes a while to get over it now they're both gone.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Look, Jan, thank you for sharing your story. It sounds like a remarkable effort. We'll get to some more of your calls and your texts very soon.
It's been a vitriolic week with the gender wars and counter-accusations poisoning Parliament. But tonight on Q&A, we'll bring some humour into the mix when Tony Jones is joined by comedian and presenter of The Project, Charlie Pickering, author and psychologist Pamela Stevenson, Minister for Employment and Workplace Relations Bill Shorten, Shadow Minister for Industry Sophie Mirabella, and from the Australian Financial Review, Catherine Fox. That's Q&A tonight, 9:35 on ABC One. You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
4:12 on 774 ABC Melbourne. Life and Other Catastrophes. Jane Fisher is with me. She's the Professor of Women's Mental Health at Monash University. Two of your texts are capturing my attention. This one from Fran. Hi, Raph. The children's responsibility is usually left to the daughters. It would be easier if the whole family helped with ageing parents. And Laura has a similar message. The responsibility for care is often left up to women because parents have the expectation that their daughters should look after them. I don't know if that reflects your experience or not.
I think, regrettably, this has been true, and that women have been presumed to be the ones who would take this responsibility on. But perhaps what this speaks to is that the family, the children, have to be quite active about putting their other differences aside and really trying to share this responsibility. A little harder when many of us are spread across states,
yes,
and usually the ones living interstate don't fully appreciate the deterioration in the way that the ones living nearby do. But I think clearly the examples we've had are that it's important to be together to make those decisions and share the responsibilities actively and fairly.
I guess, though, there are always big issues running in families.
Always. And this doesn't make them disappear.
Probably brings them into focus, perhaps.
That's true.
The word. Let's have a word to Fiona, who's called from Ballarat. Hi there, Fiona.
Hi. Yeah, I've been in the position of having elderly parents in decline for the last 10 years, first of all with my mum and then currently with my dad. Both of them were at home for as long as they possibly could be until it reached the point where they were falling over and I just couldn't get them up, or
one of
my brothers couldn't get them up, and they really needed at least 2 full-time carers at home.
What did you do, Fiona? What was the solution your family reached?
We had to, at that point, put them into care. But even when they go into care, you can't guarantee. Like with my dad, he can't speak and he's lost his mobility. And he's in a very good nursing home, but if you get casual staff on and things, you still find that he hasn't been given his buzzer, he doesn't have water by his bed in the evenings, those sorts of things. So
you're still having to be very sort of
health.
Vigilant and watchful.
Absolutely. And also, you know, I can still understand the things he's communicating with thumbs up and thumbs down, or the odd word he can get out, whereas quite often the nurses and things can't. And, yeah, just the effect of having to go from, you know, full-time employment to working casually. And its implications on my own health. I was so embarrassed at my previous workplace that I was just having to take so much time off, either through illness of my own or for attending medical appointments and things.
And I think this is one of the really well-established consequences, is that the caregiver is unable often to sustain their own employment and then has the sort of economic impact as well of not being able to participate in the workforce, and a carer's allowance doesn't really compensate for that.
No.
Fiona, what have you done now? You've given up work. How are you?
I'm teaching casually, and I've moved back to Ballarat. I sold up in Melbourne and sort of basically cashed in on my house up there.
Wow.
And I'm buying my brothers out of my parents' house that they, well, not the one I grew up in, but the one that they downsized to, in inverted commas. And, yeah, luckily I can still take another 2 years leave without pay from my full-time teaching position in Melbourne.
Right.
But, you know, it's a huge, you know, thing, like the insecurity of the forthcoming holidays. Well, from when the Year 12 finished, is there going to be any income at all coming in over that period?
Must make you pretty anxious, Fiona, that sort of uncertainty.
It does, and you've still got all, like, you can see, you know, the decline all the time with my dad. And, like, when you don't know the point at which someone is actually going to die, there's no actual end on it. He's 94 now. His brothers have all lived to 97, and a great aunt made it to 99, and none of them have been in good health at the end of their lives.
No. It raises...
Yeah, and sort of the medicalisation of old age is another real issue.
Yeah, I think that's a massive issue. Anyway.
Yeah. And I know if it was me, I certainly wouldn't want to be living under the circumstances that my dad is living in now. It sounds really bleak. Yeah.
No, look, I know what you're saying, Fiona. Look,
and both my parents really professed a very strong desire for euthanasia, which has made their very long and slow dying even worse, I think.
Mm. Look, Fiona, I appreciate you calling. I want to read out someone else's text. Good luck with the money situation and with your father. There's a text, I think, that speaks to what Fiona was saying. Hi, after many years of caring for my mum who had dementia, I've reflected that maybe we should all have to fill out a legal form to say what our wishes would be if we become unable to look after ourselves due to mental or physical frailty. Jane, do you think there is... I mean, is that worthwhile? Is there work to show that makes a difference?
I think there's great merit in that. And while the euthanasia possibility that was discussed by our previous speaker is not legal in Australia, people would often definitely have wishes about not wanting to be resuscitated or not wanting to have huge interventions gone to if they perhaps
an
illness.
It's very different to the sort of life support question, isn't it? Because a lot of the things at the end of people's life are about whether or not to up dosage, how to feed, those sort of things. So they're actually quite complicated, nuanced decisions. They're
about
flick a switch
to
on
give
or off.
Antibiotics for the pneumonia.
Yeah.
Whether to keep giving fluids when someone is perhaps partially conscious.
Mm.
But I think if these are matters which someone has given some thought to and perhaps has filled in an advanced life directive about what their wishes are in that circumstance, that probably assists the decision making. It doesn't mean that someone can make a decision on their own behalf, but it might assist the discussions that they would know, no, mum really does not want enormous lengths gone to sustain her life if she's in this situation.
You'd think that would be helpful when you're having those conversations, wouldn't you? Let's have a word to Paul in Mont Albert. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Raph. Hi, Jane. How are you?
Well, thank you.
Thanks for taking my call. I'm an only child. So I think that changes a few things.
It does. An enormous amount falls on you.
And I live in the state. I live in Melbourne now, and I moved down here a few years ago, moved my family down. And it was only when I went back to Brisbane to see my parents on a visit, I hadn't seen them for quite a while, and I was physically shocked at my father's condition particularly.
Yes.
And my mum is largely immobile, and my dad is going downhill. You know, he's got Parkinson's and getting dementia and stuff like that. So we had to make a decision really quick. Is it, do we look after our parents or do we confine them to some sort of nursing care?
Well, we both can be forms of looking after.
We ended up moving them to Melbourne.
Right.
And we've constructed a granny flat at the back of our house, and they live independently at the back. For no other reason than they do have quality of life now, and I can keep an eye on them.
Yes.
I suppose. Now, their health is getting worse, but I just could not bring myself to put them into any assisted care at that age of their lives. Do you follow what I mean?
Yeah, and it sounds as though that's been a solution that's been quite demanding. I guess they've had to leave their own social circle and environment, but also that must have imposed some significant demands on you and your family here.
Yeah, I actually had to quit my job, and I do look after them to make sure to see to their needs, do their shopping, do their banking, all that sort of stuff that we have to do. But the alternative for me was really not palatable at the time. And it's difficult when you don't have anybody else who can assist, right, like brothers or sisters, and you're living interstate. I mean, it's just the problem just compounds.
Absolutely.
Can I ask, Paul, how did it, this is maybe a harsh question, so forgive me, how did it work out financially, giving up your job and building a granny flat versus putting them into some sort of care? It might have been in Melbourne. What was the comparison?
If they'd have gone into care, Raph, they would have probably had to come up with an accommodation bond.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a far cheaper solution for them to actually pay for a granny flat at the back of our house. And, of course, they get to keep the rest of the capital that they would have had on the accommodation bond, which means they can earn income on that. Plus, they get to live close to us. Mm. It was.
But you've had to forego an income.
Yeah, exactly right. I'm looking for work now, but it's difficult.
I'm sure.
Now that we've got them settled, I can get back to living some sort of a normal life. Do you follow what I mean?
Yeah. Yes.
It takes
yes.
time to get back in the workforce. Yeah.
I'm sure.
Well, we wish you very well with that.
Thanks very much.
Good luck, Paul. Look, a few of your texts. Both my and my husband's parents live overseas. We can't be there to help with our parents on any regular basis, and it's stressful. We have siblings who are there, but the guilt and stress are significant. There are no easy solutions. And another text from Maureen. Raph, I totally disagree with the previous text. I think this is about the daughters looking after children, parents and not the sons. My three brothers and sisters-in-law are active and ever-present in visiting and supporting my elderly folks. That's from Maureen. Somebody else wants us to put this into a podcast because I'm dealing with this issue with my 90-year-old mother. It's the most stressful thing for me. I'm a daughter too. I hate what is happening and putting in applications for places. That is from Gwen. Gwen, good luck. And a final text from Sue. My sister and I cared for Dad and his farm for his last 2 months. Letting him die in his own bed, is one of my proudest achievements. Palliative care nurses are ace. That is from Sue. Look, thank you for your text, Sue, and thank you for all of your calls. Any final guidelines?
Well, I think all we've done is reveal the complexity of this, and perhaps we need to revisit it. But it's clear that families reach quite individual solutions in their circumstances. There probably isn't one right one.
Mm.
But I think what has come out of it is that it's very good to have the conversation early.
Yeah.
So even if the aged person can't actually say what they want at the time, perhaps they've expressed a wish earlier, and that is worth having documented.
Sure. Look, good thought to have, Jane. We don't podcast this, but you can listen to this segment and other Life and Other Catastrophes chats. Just go to the 774 website, abc.net.au/Melbourne. Look for Life and Other Catastrophes, and this and other segments will be there. Danny has just texted in. A friend inquired about local residential care last week for his mum, and the bond was $700,000. There you go. Jane Fisher is the Jean Hales Professor of Women's Mental Health at Monash University. Thanks so much, Jane.
Thank you for having me.